Welcome to Diverse City 2.0, Auckland's Multicultural Communities. In this podcast, you'll hear migrant voices share their first impressions on arriving in Aotearoa, New Zealand, their struggles with cultural differences, and the importance of safe spaces and finding a community to preserve and celebrate cultural practices. Kudakwash Tui, the former president of the Waitakere Ethnic Board, describes his migrant experience of coming to New Zealand about 10 years ago from Zimbabwe, when the political situation worsened there. This interview was conducted in 2014 by Smita Biswas as part of the Waitakere Ethnic Board collection.
I moved to New Zealand June 1995, so which has been here for about 20 years plus at the moment. I came here when I was, I was about 19, almost 20 years old. And in Africa, Ghana, where I came from, to finish high school is very hard, or even to finish university is hard to get a job. So I decided when I finished my secondary school, Ghana, we call it secondary school, which here I think they call it high school or college. So I decided, you know, that I need a change. So I spoke to my dad, and my dad says, okay, why don't you go to London and further your education there instead of further your education in Ghana? So we were trying to apply for schools in London. Then I decided, then one of my dad's friend decided, why don't you try Australia? So we tried Australia, then it was complicated, then we tried New Zealand. So that's why we got admission to come to New Zealand. So that's, here am I, that, you know, stuck here for about 20 years now.
It's a long time.
Yeah, it's a long time.
Did you come on your own?
Yeah, I came on my own, yes.
You left all your family back there. It was quite a brave
thing. It was a brave thing that, you know, being here on my own. When I arrived at the airport, didn't know anybody here. So just trying to find my ways around, where is the nearest hotel. And I catch a cab and say to the taxi driver, oh, just take me to the near, like a hotel which is not expensive, which is not close to the city. Then the taxi driver just, you know, took me to the city, which is the another expensive hotel. So I stayed there for 3 nights, and that time I was paying $120 a night.
Oh.
Yeah, so, because I didn't know anything about which, because I did believe that the taxi driver was telling me the truth, that this is the cheapest hotel. So then later on, I found out that I could have even find a hotel that I could have paid for $60 a night, which is back in 1995. Mm. You know, that could have paid $60 a night, but that didn't work. Yeah. So I did struggle at the beginning, you know, like going to school and at the same time also trying to look for work as well, you know, to pay my bills, because I couldn't rely on my family to send money from Africa all the time. So yeah, so I did manage to look for a job and while studying at the same time. So I think 1997, then I decided to bring my girlfriend. When it was in college, you know, she was my girlfriend. So I decided to bring her over so that at least, you know, she can also work to support me while I was studying. So she came over. Then 1998, we have our first son. Instead of, you know, her to go work to support me, we decided, you know, having a family. So that's how things started.
Mm. What did you study?
I studied accounting, BA in accounting at Auckland Uni. Then later on, I decided it was very hard for me to get a job in accounting field during that time. Then I decided to go back and drive taxi, because I've got a friend that used to drive taxi and he used to make a lot of money, you know, like every day coming home with about $200, $300 a day. Then I decided, no, school is not good for me. I have to drive taxi. So I start driving taxi in Auckland. And I drove taxi for 12 and a half years in Auckland. And why people enter my taxi? So, look, yeah, you're too young to drive a taxi. Where do you come from, driver? Oh, I'm from Africa. You're too young to drive a taxi. Why can't you study? New Zealand is a land of opportunity. Go back, you know, to school and study. You're too young to drive taxi. So I didn't, you know, I keep ignoring it. I say, come on, you don't know what I'm doing here. I'm making money in taxi. Until my children, my first two boys, anytime that I drive them to school, I drop them to school, they see a taxi. Yes, I'm going to be a taxi driver in the future when I grow up. The other one says, I'm going to be a police. So I decided, I need to be a signpost where my children can look at me for a direction. So I decided to retrain myself to study Bachelor of Social Practice at Unitec. To do, you know, maybe I thought this course, maybe I'll be able to work and make money, and at the same time also to able to give back to the community as well. So I decided to go back to Unitec to study Bachelor of Social Practice. Yeah, so that was a bit short about my life.
So is that what led you into working here as a social worker?
Yes, so this is what led me. At Unitec, the first year, during that time, first year, second year, and third year, we have to go for placement. So my first year, we struggled to find, if we say we those migrants at Unitec, we struggled to find a placement. Because by the time you go to a placement, you go for the interview and everything. They say, oh, yes, we will let you know. The next day, then they'll call you that, oh, sorry, you know, you wasn't successful. Then the next day, you talk to your colleague in class. He says, oh, yeah, I'm doing my placement at this organization. And then you ask yourself, I went there first, and we're doing a placement that is a free service. They are not going to pay us. It's a free service. Like, you know, placement is like work experience. I'm coming to do a work experience at your organization, which I'm offering my service, my time, 8 hours a day. Why do you still discriminate and say, you know, there's no vacancy? Why my colleague went 2 days after my colleagues got that, you know, that position? So we struggle, like some Africans at Unitec and few Asians there. We are the all every year we were the last people to get a placement. The others, you know, will get in first. So I did my first year placement at Salvation Army at Royal Oak. So I found out what, you know, the service, the kind of services that they do provide in the community. Then I found out, wow, what a great service. Then I talked to one of our lecturer called Dr. Lafchile. He used to be a lecturer at Unitec. Then I asked him that, well, you know, Salvation Army is doing a great job here. How many populations of Africans living in Auckland? So he has also done a research and found out that 37,000 Africans living in Auckland during that time. Then I says, wow, so 37,000 people, they are all struggling like the way that I'm struggling here. Then we need to do something. So my second year, I did a placement at Probation Services, which is Department of Correction at Mount Eden Prison. And also I found out how the probation officers, how they treat people. And I found out, I think we need something here to empower Africans. And if we are 37 of us here, then we need something that can empower us. So that's why I decided that as soon as I finish my course, I will try and set up an organization that can empower Africans. So my third year, I did a placement at Child, Youth and Family at Henderson Branch. So I also learned more about the policies and how things works in New Zealand. So I did a placement there for 3 months. And after the placement, I decided to volunteer to work for them for 6 months without getting any paid, purposely because I want to know how things works in New Zealand, the system. So after that, then I decided to set up this organization with the aim of to support Africans. And the reason why I wanted to do that, because every year, New Zealand government brings in more refugees, 750 refugees. And that 750, I would say it's maybe 100 of them will be from Africa background. And when they come, the refugee services works with them for 6 weeks. Then after 6 weeks, they are just left out there with no English, nothing to do. So I thought, we need to fill in those gaps. So by setting up this organization wasn't easy at the beginning, that you will not get any funding, because you cannot just say, you know, I've set up this organization to get funding. So but while I was driving taxi, I used to have two houses. So I sold one of my house in Avondale to keep us going, to pay for the bills, to pay for the rentals of this place while we are still establishing ourselves or proving to the funders that we are here, we mean business, we are not here to apply for funding and just disappear. So it took us about 2 years before we start getting funding from the lottery and also from the ASB. And now, you know, we're getting money from different other funders as well. Yeah, so this is a little bit background about this organization and how it started.
You've been listening to Auckland Library's podcast. You can find further information on our SoundCloud page or see the Auckland Library's website. Diversity 2.0 is also on exhibition at Level 2 of Auckland Central City Library from Monday, 15th of April to the 31st of May, 2024. Join us in learning about migrant and diaspora collectives such as Sur Collective, Auntie's House, and Black Creatives Aotearoa, alongside the distinctive work of the artist and photographer Diego Barbosa. For more information on the exhibition and interactive activities, go to our Auckland.